time, for the most part, has not been kind to Iowa's small towns. With changes to our agricultural economy and a shift toward urban living, many small towns have declined, but some have thrived. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the last three decades, Terry Besser has been studying Iowa's rural communities, and she has learned a lot about what keeps a town alive. This hour, I'll talk with her, and we'll also check in with small towns that have beaten the odds, Conrad, Osage, and Gowrie. Michael Wagler of Main Street, Iowa, will also be here to talk about strategies small towns can use, and we want to hear your stories. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll talk about the challenges facing Iowa's small towns and the factors that set some of our rural communities apart and help them to thrive. We'll check in with some Iowa towns that have beaten the odds, and we'll talk about development projects supported by Main Street, Iowa. But first, starting in 1994, Iowa State University professor of sociology, Terry Besser, began leading a long-term study tracking changes in quality of life and social capital in 99 Iowa towns. This month, they're beginning a third two-year study of those same communities. Hello, Terry.
Hello. Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah. I'm happy to have the opportunity.
And let's go back to 1994. We all remember, most of us at least, remember the 1980s, and the Iowa economy suffered a great deal during that decade. A lot of that suffering was focused on rural Iowa and rural communities with the farm crisis. So in 1994, as the economy nationwide was bouncing back, what kind of questions were you trying to answer about Iowa's small towns?
First of all, a little truth in advertising. I didn't lead the project in 1994. I was involved in it. People who led the project then have since retired. But okay, in 1994 and prior to that time, we realized that we didn't really know that much about the quality of life, and that is from empirical studies. We had what people said, but we didn't have empirical studies about what the residents had to say about the quality of life. And without that base, it was difficult to know what sorts of things might work to help revitalize small towns and what things were maybe not where we wanted to put our focus. So at that point in time, we were able to secure funding through the Iowa Legislature place, which was called the Rural Development Initiative. In that funding, we studied one town in each of Iowa's counties and were able then to establish this standard or baseline about how involved people are with each other, their assessment of local services, the social environment, how involved are they in their town. And then we could start from there and hope we could secure funding and come back 10 years later, which we were fortunate to do, and now again in 2014.
So when you started looking into these communities, how do you measure quality of life?
We asked people to assess things like how responsive and the quality of governmental services, so things like parks, safety, police services, firefighters, garbage collection, streets, and then another category of quality of life would be other amenities such as youth programs, senior programs, jobs, availability of shopping, medical services. And on top of that, an overall view of what is it like to interact with people in this town? Is this a place where people are friendly to each other, where I can trust my neighbors, I can trust people I don't even know? And so we combined those three general categories as a measure of quality of life.
You also write a great deal about social capital, and that's one of the distinguishing factors that you consider to be extremely important in whether a community is successful or declines. And for those of us who don't spend time studying sociology, social capital doesn't mean a whole lot. So can you tell us what it means to you?
Yes. Well, social capital is one factor in an equation that can turn out to help towns be more resilient or to help them succeed. And social capital is basically the relationships between people. How many people do you know? And then beyond that, how trusting are those relationships? And have you developed a history of working together with people based on those relationships? So in small towns especially, this might be the primary resource they have, their ability to think of it as a phone tree, their ability to call up folks who they know and they can trust to help put new playground equipment in the park, or to help with sandbagging in the case of flooding, or when a firefighter is killed in the line of duty and his family needs some help getting through some tough times. That phone tree, as it were, represents the relationships people have with each other and the history they have of working together and understanding that I may get nothing out of this time, but eventually helping out will come back to me and benefit my quality of life, too. We call that norms of reciprocity. So I help you now and sort of like you owe me in the future. I hate to put that economic cast to it, but I'm thinking in my mind, I know this will benefit me in the long run because then I can call this person and they'll help me out or they'll help out a project that's important to me.
So when you entered these communities and then started taking your surveys in 1994, as I mentioned earlier, this was after an incredibly difficult decade for Iowa and for rural Iowa, and a lot of small towns were in pretty tough shape. So were you starting at kind of a low point for a lot of these communities?
Unfortunately, one of my colleagues, Will Gowdy, in the Department of Sociology, who has since retired, used to he used census data research, and he used to talk about the small towns in Iowa as if you looked at a map of the state, it would form a C, and the C would surround this middle section, which would be the Des Moines area, the Cedar Rapids area, and those other counties, the small towns in those other counties, started declining in population, many of them around the turn of the century. That is not 2000, 1990. Some of those small towns reached their height of population in 1990. So this
Wait,
has been...
1990?
You're right. Thank you for correcting me. 1900.
Okay.
Yes. So this has been, for some of these small towns, a real kind of a slow motion decline. But you're right. In the 80s, especially after World War II and then the 1980s with the industrialization of agriculture, the whole economic base of many of these small towns had to change or did change. And so the farm crisis was a wake-up call saying we really need to do something. We have to diversify the economies of these towns, maybe look into manufacturing, look into service or government jobs. Some small towns decided their best bet would be to pursue a prison or maybe bring in a casino. So find some other ways to generate economic activity. Yes, the 80s and the beginning of the 90s was a wake-up call, but for some of these places, this had been a century-long decline.
Okay. Now, when you talk about social capital, you talk about a sense of community, and I'm guessing community pride is also included in that. And I've often wondered, with the declining rural population in Iowa, we've also seen a lot of school consolidation across the state, which makes a lot of economic sense. But I also spent some time as a very young child living in a very small town, and I remember how important it was to go to the high school basketball games, and everybody wore their T-shirts and you know, rooted for the Bulldogs. Has school consolidation impacted social capital in these communities? Has that taken away some of that community identity?
I'm sure you're right. I think this is more... I'm more hesitant to say one thing causes the other because I don't exactly have the data to show that. But we can show that when In fact, in 2004, we saw a decline in the quality, people's assessment of the quality of schools. And when you look at the 99 towns, the ones that really lost in people's view of how important schools were, or how high quality they were the ones where school consolidation had occurred. And you're absolutely right. These are gathering places. People have the opportunity to interact informally, and it does boost community spirit. So I understand the economies of that, too, but it does have consequences that sometimes we don't anticipate.
What were some of the other challenges or things that happened to these communities that seemed to impact from 1994 to 2004, some of the changes?
People were doing many more things outside of town. So we asked questions about where do you shop for big ticket items, for everyday things, where do you go to church, where do you do your get your medical services. And that, not surprisingly, and I expect we'll see the same thing in 2014, more people are doing those things outside of town. In addition, there seemed to be a decline in the assessment of some other services. Jobs was people's assessment of the quality and the quantity of jobs was low in 1994, but it decreased even more in 2004. And again, that should surprise no one. We did see, surprisingly, an increase in the assessment of government services, overall government services. And I'm not sure what the explanation for that is, except that at the local government level, maybe as towns are more challenged, they begin to appreciate the local firefighters or emergency response services, the job that they do for the community. Those are some of them. In addition, the social capital, even though it remains high, it has declined. People know fewer people. People have said that the towns they live in are less friendly than they perceived they were in 94, and people are less trusting. But in spite of all of that, about a quarter or three quarters of the people said they would be sorry if they had to leave the town. So that indicates to me that other forces may be pulling them to move to a metropolitan area. It isn't that they're upset with the quality of life in those towns.
Well, we're going to focus now on some of the towns that have beaten the odds. But looking at what you learned from 1994 to 2004, what percentage or a rough idea of how many of these 99 towns that you looked at were doing well?
What percentage? I guess I never looked at it that way. We would say that we could divide it into the top quartile, who are doing well in social capital, and then they're doing well in attracting population. They're doing well in retaining their quality of life and community engagement. So I would, I mean, we just arbitrarily said that a quarter of them, the top quarter, were doing well.
Okay. Well, stay with us, Terry. We're going to visit some of these communities. Not all of them are included in your study, but small towns in Iowa that are thriving today. And then we're going to bring you back into the conversation in a little while. I'm talking with Terry Besser, who is a professor of sociology at Iowa State University. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Iowa's small towns, challenges, and what keeps a town alive or even helps it to thrive. Terry Besser is a professor of sociology at Iowa State University. We will bring her back into the conversation in a few minutes. But right now, we're going to check in with a few Iowa communities that have really beaten the odds. And first, we're going to travel to Conrad. It's in Grundy County in north central Iowa. And Shane Kiernan is with me. He is chief of lending at GNB Bank in Conrad and the first president of the Main Street program in Conrad. Hello, Shane. Oh, I'm sorry. Now I'll say hello to you. Hi, Shane.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And let's go back now to 1989 in Conrad, because that was a time of real crisis in your community. It looked like you were going to lose the grocery store downtown. What was happening?
Well, we were going to lose the grocery store. And that was a time when, of course, Conrad, like a lot of small communities in Iowa, was coming out of the farm crisis. And you know, we really just couldn't didn't want to take another blow to our local economy by losing the grocery store. And so we started forming an effort around the Main Street concept, which was really new in Iowa at that point in time. There was not even a rural Main Street program like there is today. But we held a town meeting. We asked the community, really two questions. Why do you live here? And what are you willing to do to keep the reasons you live here alive and moving forward?
Now, why did you identify the closing of the grocery store as such a crisis point?
Well, because in rural communities, the grocery store is really the anchor store for the downtown area. And so losing the store really was not only losing some of the additional identity in the community, but when you lose that store, you lose that anchor. And it was going to have a ripple effect, we felt, across the entire community, whether it was housing development, school enrollment, certainly the other downtown businesses would be impacted. So it was a critical component to our community and to our downtown.
How did you save the grocery store?
That's an interesting story. We formed partnerships, a public-private partnership with the city. There was a local industrial owner in the community who had done a lot of good things for the community over the years as far as brick-and-mortar projects. And he came to us and said, if you can find a good operator, I will build a store in the community, build a new store to attract that person here. And so I took the lead on trying to locate an operator, someone who was not an owner, someone who was working in another store elsewhere in the state, and they came into the community to operate a brand new store. We used a TIF financing through the city to raise two dilapidated buildings and build a new store in the downtown area. And to date, that store is still operating. It's operating very well. The current owner has added six more stores in other rural communities in Iowa since starting the store in Conrad. So he's also working against the odds. Successful rural grocery stores in Iowa seem to be a little bit of a dying breed, but he certainly has been able to go against the grain that way and had run a successful operation.
When you reached out to the community and started talking to people about why they wanted to live in Conrad and what you could do to help this town survive and continue to be a good place to live, what did you do to bring people together? What kinds of things worked?
Well, I think we spent a fair amount of time just building consensus, sort of a very grassroots effort in the community. And the community has always been very progressive. But we were in a situation where, housing development had pretty much died off. 15% of our downtown was vacant at the time. And so I had discovered this Main Street program and concept, and we held a town meeting June 29th, 1989. We didn't know what to expect. There was a core group of people that helped kind of organize this effort. 120 people showed up. Well over 10% of the entire population of the community showed up. So that said to us that there was definitely momentum. There was definitely an interest in participating in an effort to revitalize the community around the Main Street approach. And the Main Street approach was a very important element of what we were doing because it gave us a framework, a balanced framework to approach community revitalization in Conrad.
Now, of course, a grocery store alone is not going to help a town survive. As you went through this process of saving the grocery store, focusing on your downtown and your Main Street, how did you pick projects that you felt would really secure the future of the community?
Well, it was important for us to take a community-wide approach. Traditionally, the Main Street program focuses strictly on the downtown area, but we were unique in that we wanted to apply it on a community-wide approach because we didn't feel like we would be successful with revitalization by focusing strictly on the downtown area. So one of the first things that we did, we just created a lot of small victories, things that were pride building, image building type projects, small things like selling unique, odd sweatshirts in the community. So that really sort of built our brand. But then as time went on, we moved into bigger projects. We were set aside some money for a facade grant improvement program for the downtown businesses. We ourselves got into another public-private partnership doing residential real estate development in the community, and the result of that has been four successful housing developments, over 70 new housing units in the community. So as time went on and we built credibility with the organization, we were able to do bigger and bigger projects, and we're just finishing up probably our biggest project, which is a complete facade revitalization of our downtown area involving 22 different buildings.
Is Conrad growing?
Yes. When we started in 1989, I think the census population then was about 954 or something to that nature. Today we're just over 1,100. So remarkably, Conrad sits right in the middle of three county seat communities, but we've been able to continue to thrive and grow and really have a nice niche in the region.
And to go back to one of your community gathering projects, you talked about the sweatshirts that people started wearing. You even created a little university for Conrad, right?
Yeah, it was one of the very first things that we did, and it was a fundraiser, but it was also kind of an image building thing. And of course, Conrad is very rural, agricultural community, and so we had a University of Conrad sweatshirt, and the slogan underneath it was "E pluribus plowis," and we had images of agriculture related images on the sweatshirt. And I still have mine, as a matter of fact. So they lasted a long time.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, Shane.
Sure. Glad to be a part of the show.
Shane Kiernan is chief of lending at GNB Bank in Conrad and also the first president of the Main Street program in Conrad. We're going to go from Conrad now to Osage, Iowa. It's in Mitchell County in North Iowa. And with me is Wendy Houghton. She is executive director of the Osage Chamber of Commerce. Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for thinking of us and having us on your show.
Now, tell me, in Osage, what was your approach? I know that when you got to Osage, which wasn't all that long ago, there were a lot of empty storefronts, and you wanted to do something to help build the community up. What was your approach?
Well, let me give you a little bit of history first on the city itself. We're very grateful in Osage to have a forward-thinking city council who does a five-year strategic plan, and they always try to fulfill everything on that strategic plan. So before I came, on the blueprint was to build a complex that would be multifaceted, that would house an auditorium, the Mitchell County Historic Museum, and also a health center. They also wanted an event center separate from that, and that all this has been done. It was completed in 2010, which they were thinking that to draw people into Osage, they need to have something to bring them to. So that was all on the books before I came to Osage. I started in 2006, and there were a lot of empty storefronts at that time. So I did some research, and I asked the city, well, what do you have to encourage people to open up these storefronts? And they have a revolving loan fund, which is a very nice revolving loan fund because there's no interest for the first, I believe, 2 years. And then it's only 3% after that. So it was really encouraging for businesses to open up. So that's where I came in at in 2006.
All right. But, well, Wendy, you know, a lot of small towns think that tourism might be the answer, or attracting people to come into their community. It's an uphill battle for a lot of communities. What has made Osage successful?
Well, there again, back in 2009, they passed the hotel motel tax. And we, at that time, we only had a Super 8. Since then, we have an Americ Inn, a brand new Americ Inn. And so that hotel motel tax is just a wonderful tool to advertise and promote Osage. Also since then, since 2006, we only have two empty storefronts, and one of those is being refurbished right now for somebody to move into. So we are very, very lucky in that respect to our main street.
I know that there were two young women who grew up in Osage, went away to college, came back and opened businesses in the community. And I'm curious, obviously that was a huge boon for the community, but do you know what brought them back? Was there something that Osage did to create that kind of loyalty?
I think they missed the quality of life that they experienced growing up, and they wanted to bring their families up in the same type of community. And Osage was home to them, and they knew that it was a good community and to raise kids. And I believe that is a strong reason why they moved back and started their own businesses.
You've also brought a manufacturing company, Valent Bioscience, into Osage. So that, I can imagine, that has had a big impact on jobs.
That is just huge. I have to give credit to the Mitchell County Economic Development. They worked on getting that company to Osage for many, I would say at least 3 years. It was in the works, and nobody knew about it, of course, because that's the nature of their business. But, yeah, it's a strong business. It hires a lot of chemists and that type of job. So it's a high-paying job, well-educated people. And they are going to be having their grand opening here in the end of June. And when it's all said and done, they're expecting 9,200-plus people working at Valent Biosciences.
So
and that has really helped our community.
The future looks bright in Osage. Thank you so much for talking with me, Wendy.
Well, thank you so much for having us on. I really appreciate it.
Wendy Hooten is executive director of the Osage Chamber of Commerce. And now we're going to go to Gowrie. It's in Webster County in west central Iowa. And Marcy Berner is on the line. Hello, Marcy.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And I know that Gowrie doesn't have an economic development commission, but a development commission for the town as a whole that formed about 25 years ago. And what was the goal of that commission when it formed?
Right. Well, at that time, and I'm guessing it was about 25 years ago, they did have two different groups. And one was more economic based, one was more business based. And they kind of found a lot of things were overlapping, and it was in the best interest to just join those groups together and have our Gowrie Development Commission. And what we do with that is we kind of, you know, partner with the city to do an overall, you know, what's in the interest of the town. We help work with new businesses to bring them in. You know, we want to make sure that it's attractive, and we, you know, sponsor the flower baskets and yard of the week type of thing. And then we also have some committees that work on, you know, the housing and the quality of life. So we cover several different areas with that group.
And I know that you have focused a lot on quality of life and on recreational opportunities. What has been the goal with Gowrie?
Well, it seems like the last few years it has really been on our recreation activities, because we had a golf course that had changed hands ownership-wise, and it became an opportunity for the city to get involved. We made that a municipal golf course. We have a swimming pool here in town. Last year we did a huge reconstruction on a pool that was 40 years old and needed a lot of work done to it, and so they raised the funds. They were able to basically keep the pool in town, keep the golf course here in town, and you know, keep those essential services that we felt were an important part of the quality of life.
Is Gowrie a growing community?
You know, it's interesting. When I look back at the census information, we have been consistent right at about 1,000 people for the last 40 years. It is almost scary if you look at the statistics for the census. So we just, you know, we're keeping that consistent.
And you, in some ways, are a little bit of a bedroom community, a place where people can live in Gowrie and commute to the Fort Dodge area, right?
Correct. We're about 20 miles southwest of Fort Dodge, and so that helps a lot, too, with employment opportunities, shopping opportunities, and those types of things. So it's nice being close to that.
Well, Marcy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Marcy Berner is part of Gowrie's Development Commission, and we've been taking a look at some of the small towns around Iowa that have really beaten the odds and continue to survive and even thrive in the face of so many challenges. We're going to continue this conversation in a moment. We also want to hear from you. What about your small town? What's worked there? What's not working? Is there a small town with a great story that you'd love to share with us? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll bring Terry Besser of Iowa State University back into the conversation, and also Michael Wagler, who's state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about small towns in Iowa. As you know, small towns in Iowa have faced a lot of challenges with the changing agricultural economy, people moving to cities or gravitating to cities for shopping and for employment. A lot of small towns have really struggled. Now, this hour, we're talking with people who have studied small towns and people who have worked to help them survive and help them thrive. Terry Besser is here with me. She's a professor of sociology at Iowa State University. And also, we welcome to the conversation now Michael Wagler. He is state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. Hello, Michael. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here today. And we are going to continue talking about small towns around the state. We want to hear your stories as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Michael, when communities come to you with an idea or to work on a plan for development, where do you start?
Well, Main Street Iowa is a comprehensive downtown revitalization program. We are located in the Iowa Downtown Resource Center at the Iowa Economic Development Authority. So one of the things that we look at doing is entering into a formal partnership with designated communities after an application process to look at their downtown and community revitalization efforts in a very comprehensive fashion. So the mission really gets down to the fact that we help Iowa communities improve their social and economic well-being by identifying their unique identity, their unique assets and character, and helping build on that using historic preservation as a defined tool.
So I know that, you know, I've driven through so many small towns over the years post-farm crisis where you do drive down Main Street and you see all of those empty storefronts and buildings that are dilapidated and in decline. Now, of course, not every community that comes to Main Street, Iowa to work on a plan with you, not every community is that far along in that process, but I'm sure many of them are. And of course, everybody wants to attract businesses to their downtown. That's part of having a thriving community. But is identifying what your community's strengths are, knowing something about what makes your community unique, is that important to attracting businesses?
I think it is very important. And one of the things to keep in mind, too, is Shane mentioned it from Conrad about the Main Street approach. And it really looks at that comprehensive nature of it. And while so many communities focus on we want to recruit businesses in directly right from the get-go, one of the things that our approach looks at is that it is an incremental process. Downtowns and communities didn't deteriorate overnight. And on the converse, they're not going to revitalize overnight. So we work with communities to not only identify their unique assets and identity, but also work with them on that comprehensive approach of looking at how we could help build capacity, as Terry mentioned, that social capital side of it, how we could look at improving the physical identity of the community there again on an incremental fashion, one building at a time, one storefront at a time, identifying the unique social aspects of a community and building on those to identify how we can help create and recreate generational memories for downtowns, and also looking at that economic side of how we could help not only provide quality understanding of what the economic base is of a community, but also building on that to help the retention and expansion of existing businesses there again to strengthen the existing assets a community has.
Now, Terry, in your research, are you able to draw a correlation between a healthy downtown and quality of life, people's level of happiness and feeling of investment in their community?
We did not look at that in the past. In 1994, that wasn't very much on people's radar. In 2004 either. Since then, I think many development experts have decided there's more to development than attracting an industry. And part of it is the local amenities, keeping people in town as well as attracting people to town, and that will bring in businesses. So we didn't look at that in the past. It's something that in another study in 2008, I did examine were downtown amenities, and that's part of what we'll be doing in 2014. It's part of a national, effort that's been championed mostly by Richard Florida about attracting what he calls the creative class. And those folks want a vibrant, diverse downtown. Well, he's thinking of Chicago downtown, right, and maybe Des Moines. But I think there are parallels also for small towns that people do like going to a downtown, having a place to gather. And as many of the people that you've talked to have told you, it's also a source of community pride and identity.
Absolutely. And speaking of communities that have beaten the odds, I want to visit one more of those communities now. Paul Clausing is on the line from Sioux Center. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you.
How are you doing, Charity?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And I understand Sioux Center. I mean, we've talked a lot about some of the different approaches that these small towns have taken. In Sioux Center, a lot of the success has been because of attracting businesses that have brought new people looking for jobs into the community, right?
That's correct. I was enjoying listening to all of the participants here that have taken part so far, and pretty exciting stuff going on in Iowa. So in Sioux Center's case, we've been involved with economic development and mostly industrial development starting back probably 40, 50 years ago. It was a vision that some of our forefathers had, and so that's been carried forward, you know, into today. And Sioux Center probably has about 15 different industries, a lot of different sizes that are providing probably around 2,500 jobs to our community and area. But what really I think today this discussion on amenities really strikes a chord with us. We've done a lot of work with different amenities in the community, from a new 18-hole golf course, a all-season center that's a ice arena, indoor water facility, a new event center that we just put up a year ago. We've had a mall in our downtown that the city sponsored about 20 years ago, and that's fully occupied, and that actually serves as a gathering point for a lot of our residents in our community.
Now, Sioux Center, we talked with community holding steady or growing just a little bit. Sioux Center has really experienced a population boom in recent years. I'm looking at historic populations, 1990, 5,000, 2000, 6,000, 2010, 7,000. I mean, really growing a great deal since 1950, in fact, when it was only 1,800 residents. And I know that a lot of the people who have moved into the community are Hispanic. And I'm curious about how that has changed your community and how welcoming Sioux Center has been to people who come from faraway places.
Right. Well, we've had, you know, in the last 10 years and probably the 10 years before that, about a 17 to 18% population growth. So in a 20-year period, probably about a 35-36% growth. And our Hispanic population makes up about 12 to 15% of our population. But I would say our community has embraced that and is very welcoming. We have a couple of organizations. One is called CASA, and the other one is Amistad Cristiana, and really reaches out to a lot of these folks and tries to get them involved in the community in different ways. And I think that has really served us well.
Do you expect more growth in Sioux Center?
We do. Our latest census was about 72 to 7,300. So we're thinking like next year we will probably do a special census just to kind of verify where we are. But we have a number of business ventures that we're working on. We just have had a couple of announcements just in the last couple of weeks of some of our local commercial retail businesses that are expanding. We have a car dealership that's expanding and a rental facility that is expanding. And they serve a broader geographic area. And, you know, something that's unique about Sioux Center is that we're kind of midway between Sioux City, Iowa, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So a lot of those services really need to be accessed here versus going further out. And, of course, people still do that, but we're trying to do as much as we can to try to capture that service here if we can.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for talking with me.
You are welcome.
Paul,
have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Paul Klausing of Sioux Center. And Terry, I want to go talk a little bit about some things that Paul and I were talking about. And that is that a lot of the small communities that are thriving population-wise are welcoming large influxes of immigrants from sometimes faraway places. This really changes the ethnic makeup of a community. And one of the things that in your research you have noticed is that often communities with strong social capital, a strong sense of identity, strong relationships between neighbors aren't necessarily welcoming to outsiders.
You're absolutely right. That tends to be one of the challenges that small towns face, especially very small towns. That is maybe 1,000 or fewer people. They've developed close relationships among themselves, and that makes them a little insular in their relationships. So that is challenging. But as our Sioux City person mentioned, that many of them have been able to overcome that, or at least they're working to overcome that. I think it's not here we've accomplished it and so we're done with it. It's an ongoing challenge that they have. I want to go back for a minute, if I might, Charity. One of the things that Osage and Sioux Center have in common that hasn't been mentioned, and maybe Conrad and Gowrie, I'm not familiar with their situation, but one of the things those two towns have in common is that they have a municipal utility situation where the utilities are locally owned. Now, the significance of that is that in both cases, they've worked stridently for energy conservation. In fact, Osage is known nationwide for doing that. Well, the significance of that is then businesses, local businesses, those already there, businesses that are thinking of coming in, will have lower energy costs. And so that's appealing to them. But in addition, it provided Sioux Center, for example, with the funds to be able to help the downtown area build this mall in the downtown. And it also created this pattern of working together to conserve local resources and to build up the local economy. So I wanted to make sure that got said, because I think that represents a local institution that's really important and some towns have been able to build upon.
Very interesting. I want to get to the phones. We have a number of people who want to join this conversation. Christopher is on the line in Dumont. Hello, Christopher.
Hello, Charity.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
Well, you guys talking about all the small towns that are surviving and thriving. Well, from my neck of the woods, it's like a ghost town. I mean, people walk around town just to have fun. I mean, I'm telling you, this place is like a junkyard. The crime rate is really high, and it's like we got a car wash and maybe one little dinky J&T Grocery. So I guess we're in a very economic decline in our community. And I just want to say, you know, for all the people out there, you know, today on the show that have talked about your small towns, I think you guys have nothing compared to what I go through on a regular basis. We have maybe 300 people maximum. And most of the people here are elderly, and we constantly have break-ins and robberies. And I'm just telling you that you guys have a pretty lucky out there. You know, all you people out there that think you're struggling to, you know, to make a living, you know, and you think you have it bad, you know, you guys have no idea how much better you guys have it out there compared to, you know, to out here.
Right. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for sharing that. And I know that there are a lot of towns in Iowa that are in similar circumstances and really, really struggling. And Michael, when someone from a town like Dumont that is really struggling comes to you and wants to start a plan to make the town better and stronger, how do you start with something like that?
Well, one of the things that we find over and over again is that no matter what strategy you use for community or downtown revitalization efforts, it has to start within. One of the core principles of the Main Street program is that it is a self-help program. So, for instance, you know, a community like Dumont or others in similar situations, not just communities of 300, but also of 3,000, 6,000, and 10,000. One of the things that we would start with is that public meeting. It's that gathering of people together in an interactive opportunity to voice their opinions, to voice their conversations, very similar to what Shane talked about in Conrad. Really rallying the troops around a central point to come together and move forward. The idea that we have to think bigger, we sometimes have to look at the people inside of our community to leverage resources and entrepreneurship. And while everyone could come up with great research, Main Street Iowa could provide resources and tools to provide an opportunity to grow. In the end, it is a core function of the local community to take it upon themselves to move forward, which we will help support all the way.
All right. And we are nearly out of time, but let's take one final call. Carol is on the line in Clarion. Hello, Carol.
Hi. I'd like to say some good things about a small town. They have two places there that supply about 900 jobs, which makes it nice. In fact, they're looking for housing. But I think something they've done is they've catered to the young people. In the last 3 to 4 years, I mean, they've put up a new, but renovated the theater so that they have a digital projector. The library has been renovated. The pool has been completely redone. And so there are lots of things to keep young people and their children there. And I think that's important. And plus, the school people realized early on that we're going to have to merge with some of these smaller towns. And they've embraced it, and the people have been well received. And I think that is very helpful to a town.
Well, Carol, we're out of time, but thank you so much for sharing that. And some of the themes that we are hearing, of course, jobs, schools, nice downtown, and community involvement. And Terry, I'm eager to talk with you in a couple more years once you've completed this survey. This is going to take you 2 years to talk to these 99 small towns again, right?
Yes, and we have a second phase that we'll be doing in next summer, so that's why it's taking us 2 years. I look forward to it. I'll be happy to come back.
All right, thanks a lot. Terry Besser is professor of sociology at Iowa State University, and Michael Wagler, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Michael Wagler is state coordinator for Main Street, Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, it's Horticulture Day. We're going to start by talking about pond weeds and how to get rid of them. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.